shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul, seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek.
Good evening, America. And to all of our listeners all over the world, you're listening to a spooky episode of Let's Weekend. I am your ghoul with the most... No, I'm not fucking doing that. Yeah. Anyway, I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah.
Honestly, that lasted longer than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, I had to. I was like, no, this isn't working. I'm fucking stopping this now. You know, I'm not the fucking Crypt Keeper. I can't do that shit. But yeah, so this is more or less our Halloween episode, because unfortunately our show will not be following on Halloween this year. It'll actually be a day late.
Yeah.
So not that it's really necessary, because the world is already terrifying enough as it is.
Yeah.
But there's also some sugary goodness in there as well. Amongst other things, the absolute foreign knowledge that not only are our leaders absolutely fucking stupid, but they can't really even hide it that effectively anymore. The ongoing saga of the impeachment is ongoing. We got a few more things to add in this week's installment, including the fact that a handful of GOPers are really fucking stupid. And either that or they're just trying to put on a brave front because they're absolutely convinced that their followers are idiots. But some other stuff also happened this week, including some stuff happened in Hong Kong. Emmett Till is getting a new bulletproof memorial. We'll explain why. Trump put forth and then retracted an idea for where the 2020 G7 summit will take place. It was actually so bad that the whole thing happened in the time of like 48 hours.
Yeah.
Like, that's how bad it was. Also, we got some more stuff from the Brexit nonsense. Greta Thunberg got a beetle named after her. And then, of course, we got some media stuff, including some trailers for some highly anticipated films. One of them might be a Star Wars. With that, let us start, as we always do. Phil, what have you been doing this week?
So this week has been a little crazy, because we've been kind of getting ready for my mom's surgery. So that was a thing that happened.
What is she going into surgery for?
She went into yesterday for back surgery.
Oh.
Third time.
Oh, God.
That happened. I talked to her pretty good.
That's good.
Compared to the last time now. World's different, though. Yeah, so we'll probably be getting back normal around here.
Okay.
So apart from that, we'll have a job on like 6 or 7 times.
Mm-hmm.
These guys have leveled up like significantly.
Mm.
There's a couple of songs on that particular album that they don't really hold up too well, but that's just because the songs that they're surrounded by are just that damn good. So it's kind of like, you know, on any other album, those would have been pretty standout songs, but it's weird. Hmm. Yeah. So yeah, I recommend checking out. It's like, go to YouTube, Spotify, or Fall, like, improved dramatically.
All right.
So there's been that. And then, of course, PC Building Simulator is still doing that. I ran into my first game-breaking. Yeah, so I was doing it's a job for a client. He was a private investigator. He needed to go undercover, so I needed a gaming rig. So I built him one. fine, great. Then he comes back and says, "Well, I'm working on a case. I need a storage upgrade for my computer." Thinking, yeah, pretty straightforward, no problem, right? Yeah, I get the computer in and realize there's no way I can actually install a hard drive because he's got a 280mm all-in-one water cooler in the front, and that's the only place that I can actually mount that water cooler. There is a spot to do it up top, but there's not enough clearance between the cooler and the motherboard, so I can't put it there. Oh. And the front is where the 3.5-inch drive bays. So yeah, I can't install the drive bays and the water cooler at the same time, and I can't change the water cooler because it's one of the parts that has to remain in the system. So it's basically, I'm fucked. Okay. One star.
Is there a way you can just tell the dude that?
No. It's like your options are make it work or quit. That's. So I ended up with a 1-star rating and solved this from that. It's been fun. I'm now officially in the crypto mining wave of 20. So, yeah, I'm expecting to start stocking up before that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Now that insider knowledge.
Yeah.
Been kind of on an old man heavy metal binge at work. I've been listening to a lot of, Iron Maiden, Diamond Head, Black Sabbath, Motorhead, things like that. It's just, it's good to go back to that stuff here and there. Just when you're, when you settle into one thing for an extended period of time, you got to go back home, and that's definitely what it's felt like for me these last few days.
Mm-hmm.
Still reading X-Men comics. The X-Men number one and Marauders number one are out now. I don't really want to say too much about them because obviously we're not all caught up on it yet. But I'm really excited for what they're going to be doing with this IP moving forward. And I'm really just so enthusiastic about this, I want to say, like, mutant sandbox that Jonathan Hickman has put together that I've actually been doing a little bit of creative writing on my own to that end. So I sat down last night to try and get some momentum going on that, and all I ended up doing was kind of throwing down a bunch of data pages like Hickman himself likes to do and not much else. But I'll get there. I've got an idea for what I want to write in mind, and I don't know if I'll ever actually release it at one point or another, but it just feels good to be writing this shit again.
Nice.
So that's been my week.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
I picked up that game again. Kingdom New Lands. I know, you guys. I know. And, like, there must have been another update because it was bugging out crazy. Like, we had to restart the Xbox itself, not just the game, like, 3 times yesterday. It was bananas. But, I still haven't gotten that last achievement, so onward! Excuse me. I've been playing Pokemon Go, and I'm only about 200,000 XP from next level, which is 40, which is max level, so pretty excited about that, and it's really really only, like, 20 raids. So, and I'm sure I'll be out raiding again this weekend. I think Darkrai is still around. I got a few of him, but I could use a few more. And we've been watching MXC. You guys remember that one?
Yeah.
Most Extreme Elimination Challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've got that. And actually, there's a season 1 and 2 combo DVD. It actually goes for a good bit of money on eBay. So I guess it got rare. But you know what? It is still freaking hysterical. I love the writing on that show. So he's kind of a little iffy about letting my kid watch it, but some of the stuff goes over his head. It's like watching Bugs Bunny when we were kids. And then we've been watching Letterkenny. Season 5 or 7, I believe, is the most recent. And what else? Oh yeah, we're still moving on with the Marvel movies. We are disgustingly behind, but we watched Thor: Dark World, so we're kind of, you know, only 5 years behind now. It's pretty bad. But yeah. Really, that's about it for me this week.
All right, Chris, what about you?
Yeah, so I went and saw Zombieland Double Tap earlier this week, and it's pretty good. It's not really too much different from the original. It's kind of that same kind of thing, same kind of, mostly the same kind of humor. Mm-hmm. Though they do talk a bit about... it's 10 years further in, so like the whole premise is that there's been like evolutions with the zombies. Mm-hmm. So they're like new types, and they describe like the Homer is the super dumb zombie. Mm. That doesn't really it doesn't really pose a threat to most people. There's the Hawkings, which are super smart zombies that can like figure out around their way around traps and such. That kind of thing. And then they introduce a new one that's kind of brought into play called the T-800s, which are kind of these super tough zombies that are kind of hard to kill without, you know, having to do a lot of shooting and all that with them. And that's kind of the big thing that the group is dealing with. But yeah, there's... it's pretty fun. They make some jokes about that it's 2019, but society stopped like 10 years ago. So there's like a good joke where they get a new member on board who's really dumb woman named Madison. And she goes on like, oh, there should be this thing where these network of people with cars if you're too drunk and you can't drive home, you can use the internet to get somebody to take you home. And of course, everybody's like, well, they're going to murder you. And it's like, she's like, yeah, but there's be like a rating system. If they don't murder you, then it's like 4 points. But if they murder you, it's like 0 points. Kind of some funny bits like that. There's some bits where Woody Harrelson's character is doing his thing. They talk about like it's not 2009 anymore kind of thing, but yeah, it's a pretty good movie for what it is. A nice little follow-up to the original. I watched My Name is Dolomite.
That's the new Eddie Murphy movie.
Yep. Based on the original blaxploitation movie.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of good actors in there as well. Lots of fucking cursing, which you would expect. And, oh, yeah, that was the thing that was weird about Zombieland is they curse a ton in that. I think even more so than the original.
Mm-hmm.
But that was just something that was a little bit weird. I noticed. But, yeah, the... Dolomite is really well done. People should definitely check it out if they want to get like the kind of black version of the movie that was based on The Room.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of how that was made, kind of thing.
See, the thing is, though, is that unlike The Room, Dolomite was actually a financial success.
Yeah.
A very big financial success, might I add.
Yeah, that's sort of how it ends with them sort of getting to the point of... it going national.
Mm-hmm.
With the distribution, kind of seeing how that goes. But yeah, that's well worth watching. And I've been watching more AEW.
Mm-hmm.
They are kind of just killing it right now.
Mm.
After a few episodes, it's really well done. It's they're not falling into the same traps that the WWE has been for like the last several years. Mm-hmm. Things like, oh, hey, here's our like main event for the next pay-per-view, and we're going to have them basically fight every week in different types of matches so that you're bored of it by the time it actually is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
When it actually counts, sort of thing. I think the big one is Jericho versus Cody Rhodes for their next pay-per-view, and they haven't really fought at all. They have lots of promos that are cut against each other and all that, but as far as, you know, doing like constantly just harping like, this is the big match, we're going to keep mentioning this every single time that there's any moment to breathe, and it's just a breath of fresh air the way they handle it. Especially, it's only a 2-hour show and they're not that bent on like promoting the pay-per-view over everything else, so they get a bunch of matches in that 2 hours. Maybe get like 6 or 7. And they do some promos and such, but for the most part, they kind of take their shots where it makes sense and don't try to overdo it the way that WWE does.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that just makes a real smart kind of show, the way it's put together. But yeah, this it's the first bit of like live wrestling I've been watching consistently in quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and they're even on TNT and just a kind of a weird revitalization of like the Monday Night Wars back mm-hmm. in the '90s with TNT versus I guess it's Fox and USA now, I think.
Yeah.
The main ones that are on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Fox show doesn't seem to be doing that well for them, SmackDown.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox might have potentially spent a lot of money for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, sure, whatever. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. And let's see, been in streaming this week. On Sunday, played some more Stranded Sails. And that game is a lot of fun. It kind of reminds me a lot of, what is it, Yonder the Cloudcatcher Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being a little bit of Zelda, but a little bit of Stardew Valley with some farming and crafting and stuff like that you do. But also, it's kind of more directed and focused on telling its story and kind of having you do stuff. So there's like, even a little bit of like, what is it called? Like Fantasy Life, mm-hmm. where the level 5 game was.
Yeah.
Where you're very much just getting your quests, you're doing them, getting to the next stuff. And like right now, the quest I'm in is I have to, instead of getting like a normal sword, they're having me collect these pieces of like an ancient sword
mm-hmm.
that just happen to be scattered across these islands that you're at. And so I'm in the middle of doing that sort of thing. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun. And it's got a launch discount going on right now for the first week or so of launch on, I think, everything it's on, PC, PS4, and Switch. So people that are kind of into that kind of thing should definitely check it out. Let's see. Also streamed on Tuesday, Return of the Oberdin. That's mm-hmm. on consoles. I was playing some more of that. And, yeah, that game is just a lot of fun. Really cool way of handling that with like a, you being just like a supernatural insurance adjuster working for the with the Indian company, East Indian company, and you're kind of exploring the ship. And the thing I didn't really even notice just from the intro is that you're controlling a woman.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of voice from her at the beginning, and it's, otherwise, you wouldn't necessarily peg it as that being a woman character
mm-hmm.
that you're controlling. But, yeah, I even found some things that I hadn't seen when I was originally playing on a PC. There's, like, a foot that's hanging from a wall. Mm-hmm. That leads to some extra scenarios that I hadn't seen before. So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff with that game. Been playing a little bit more after that as well. And, let's see. Yesterday I streamed Evoland Legendary Edition on the Switch, mm-hmm. Which is on sale for $5 now. And that includes Evoland and Evoland 2. The first game, it's been out for quite a while on Steam. It's kind of a game that kind of tries to introduce you to kind of, not really like a history of RPGs, but like a history of like features and innovations and like console games and such over the years, even. Where it kind of starts off with like a very Game Boy aesthetic to it, very simple graphics, kind of greenish colored. It moves on to like 8-bit colors and 32-bit colors and all the way up to like 3D, like PS1 and N64 level graphics and all that before it starts turning into like an actual game. But up to that point, it's kind of just gradually introducing these things like, now you can save or you can get XP in fights and all this sort of stuff. That is neat the way they do it. With 2, the thing they do that is pretty cool is kind of starts off as a game up front.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of feels like a Game Boy Advance game. Kind of like top-down Zelda, but with actual XP you're getting for fighting. And then sort of starts to layer in some of the... I think you time travel a bit and you... to like 50 years in the past, and then over that process, the graphics devolve to like a NES style graphics kind of thing while they're also doing other stuff with that. It's pretty well done.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad they ripped it off from me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The concept of evolving graphical style was something I had in the design doc that started on.
I remember that.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah. But yeah, that's that collection is on sale for $5 on Switch. That's a pretty good value for that. But yeah, also kind of playing a little bit of The Outer Wilds. Just got that. I did the preload, but just got to play a little bit of it yesterday and a little bit today. So far, it's been pretty good. Kind of like what if Bethesda, instead of trying to make their games stupidly huge and expansive with all the systems and such, like focused on a few things, kind of just built the game around that. That's kind of what Outer Worlds is. Where it's kind of, it doesn't have the pick up everything and drag it around slowly as you try to get to some place you can store it or sell it. Mm-hmm. No, the like base building stuff, all that. But focuses on like storytelling stuff, so you can have a good bit of replayability, as well as just from statistical points of having like speech checks to get you different avenues of taking conversations and all that, but also. Just being able to do things in a bunch of different ways and have people react in different ways as well. Like I was playing and just through the natural course of killing enemies and getting to the first big town, I had armor from one of the enemies and they're like, are you a marauder? I'm like, no. It's like, oh, you got the armor on. They kind of like noticed that the armor you're on is from the bad guys and kind of commenting on it a little bit. You could play it up if you want. Like, yeah, I'm a marauder. What's up? Kind of thing. But yeah, there's like a lot of cool stuff there. So I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. I'm going to stream that on Saturday. It'll be our Saturday stream. Sunday will be a medieval. And then like Tuesday and Thursday next week are just going to be a bunch of scary games. Kind of move through them as I get too spooky for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that'll be kind of the streaming stuff for the next week or so. But yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you guys?
All right. Well, you guys know what I've been playing this week. Because it finally, fucking finally, came out. And it is glorious. Trails of Cold Steel 3. So you know how, like, in the first Cold Steel game, they started the game, like, in media res? Where it's like, you know, it's like right in the... I think it's like they start the game in like in the middle of like the third quarter of the story arc. Yeah, they do the same shit here. where you actually start off playing the members of the new Class 7. And then Rain suddenly shows up at the end to save the day. Yeah, so... Basic plot of Cold Steel 3 is that it's been a year since the end of Cold Steel 2. The rest of Class 7, of course, already graduated and went away. Reen instead decided to stick around. And he ends up, you know, he ends up doing work for the Erebonian government, you know. At the beginning of this game, he accepts a teaching position at the new Thor's military branch, military school. It's a branch school that they've put in this town called Leaves. And basically, this Class 7, the one that you're taking, it starts off pretty small. It's just Rain and three other people. One of them happens to be Altina, which if you play Cold Steel 2... You know who that is. She was the other girl who could control a one of those, I guess they call them battle dolls or whatever. So I'm sort of like where I'm playing now. I'm in the middle of the what they, you know, they're because much as like what they did with the first Cold Steel. In this game, the class, you know, has to go out to do field assignments, although they don't call them field assignments this time. There's something more like special operations or something like that. And I got to tell you, the first time I walked into the library in this new school and saw over on the bookshelf that they had a copy of that perennial bestseller in the in Erebonia, Christ Who's Gonna Die First, I knew I was truly back. Oh, yeah. But they are starting to bring in more characters from the Liberal arc into it. Just as the game begins, you end up running into... both Tita and Agat. In fact, Tita ends up being one of the students at the school, and Agat is Agat. Like,
yeah, he's never going to change.
No. But you know, they also start making references to stuff that's happening in Crossbell. Because, you know, by this point in the story, Crossbell has been annexed by Erebonia. So, at least two of the... I've ran into at least two characters now that were originally part of the Crossbell arc. Specifically, the Sanguine Ogre herself, Shirley Orlando. And yeah, that's where I'm at right now. They are starting to sort of focus on the point that, you know, the system in Erebonia is kind of fucked. And it's kind of holding back the entire country from advancing beyond the semi-feudal state it currently is. But that's another thing. So yeah, I will be playing that for the foreseeable future. And hopefully we won't have to wait much longer for Cold Steel 4.
Yeah.
Which, from what I've been told, the rest of the gang from the Liberal arc show up in that one too.
Yep.
Including Estelle and Joshua. But
and Lynn.
And Lynn and Scheherazade, they're all there. So yeah, I'll have more to talk about that when I get the chance. What else? I recently came across an app that I found out that, you guys know Drew Karpyshyn, right? Guy who was like one of the main writers on Mass Effect.
Yeah.
One of the main writers on Knights of the Old Republic.
Back when BioWare was good.
Yeah. Well, he was involved in developing an app called Storyscape. And basically, Storyscape is a app with several multiple-choice visual novel games in it. Some of them are tie-in, some of them are completely original. One of them is based on the X-Files. Another is more or less based on James Cameron Titanic, but so far I haven't seen any of the characters from the movie in it. It's just you're on the Titanic. And, you know, it's also got original stuff like a romance visual novel called Life 2.0. There's also some fantasy ones as well. And it's good stuff. I'm still sort of working my way around how the monetization in that game actually works. What else? The one drawback I think a lot of people might have is the art style that it uses. It's the animation style where they use like static images, but they morph the images around to simulate movement.
Yeah, that's a hard one to look at for me.
Yeah, it can be a little off-putting at times. A lot of times it works just fine, but there are times when, like, you know, they have to, like, change emotion and stuff, and it's like, you guys didn't even try. But, yeah, so what else? Books, as usual. Specifically kids' books. Have you guys ever heard of this movie called Rise of the Guardians?
No, not that one.
It was a few years ago. You have? Bill?
Yes, I have.
You have, okay. So apparently Rise of the Guardians is actually based on a book series that I had not heard of. So I went out to the used bookstore today, this afternoon, and I was going out there to get stuff. And then I found out who the guy is that actually is behind the book series, who both writes and illustrates it.
Who?
It's a guy named William Joyce, who is, well, fun fact, he's a descendant of James Joyce.
No, but that's neither, shit.
That's neither here nor there. But
that's cool, though.
Yeah. But this guy's been kind of involved in all of our childhoods in one way or another. He originally started out as a, primarily as a, you know, for work as a concept and design director for Pixar. So if you've watched Toy Story or A Bug's Life, you're seeing some of his work right there on the screen. But as his author page tells you, his main bailiwick is kids' books, and he's written several, you know, children's picture books that, of course, he also illustrates for. But he's also done the what's called the Guardians of Childhood series, which is far, far cooler looking than the movie ever manages to make it look. Basically, their ideas of like what are the origin stories of like classic characters like Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, the Sandman, and I think the last one is Jack Frost. So it comes up with these ideas. It's like, you know, like, for example, Santa Claus's real name is Nicholas St. North, and he's a Cossack from Russia who is really good with a scimitar. and then there's like the Easter Bunny, whose real name is Edmund Easter, who is he's basically one of the last kinds of a group of warrior rabbits who are also chocolate makers. And he just does not give a fuck. He has run out of fucks to give. It's just, it's good shit. Highly recommended. And, yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. You know, I did other regular stuff now that, you know, the weather's gotten to where I can actually go out and do stuff now and not melt. And that's about it. All right, so, anybody got anything they want to add before we move on?
Nah.
No?
Nah.
All right. Well, then, it is now time for everyone's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And since this is our more or less Halloween episode, I thought we'd do a spooky random factoid. Although it's not really spooky, in fact, so much as, well, just the major inspiration it's had. So, way back in, I think it was around 1999, 2000, you guys may remember a little movie that came out, a little independent film a lot of people heard of called The Blair Witch Project.
Ah, Jesus, fuck. Sorry, I have strong opinions on that movie.
Yeah. So, that movie is basically the first major example of how, of what to do with viral marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's pretty much the only reason that movie managed to do as well as it did.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. On its own,
it's shit.
Yeah.
It's 2 hours of my life. I still haven't fucking gotten back, and I'm still mad.
Yeah. So, you know, most people see that as sort of like the movie that's like the godfather of the quote-unquote found footage horror movie. Or more specifically, the mockumentary horror movie, where it's like made as, where it's shot as sort of like a kind of documentary, or at least implied to be some kind of documentary. Now obviously there were some movies that did it beforehand. You guys ever heard of a movie called Cannibal Holocaust?
Mm-mm.
It's fairly infamous. It actually had the director had to actually go to court to prove that he didn't actually make a snuff movie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's Living Dangerously.
Yeah. But the movie I'm talking about is a movie. It was a television film, and it came out before, you know, Paranormal Activity, before The Blair Witch Project, before all of those movies. It came back way back in 1992, and it was a television film shot on BBC One, premiered on Halloween night, and never ever broadcast it again.
Oh, that good, huh?
Because it got such a backlash that the BBC basically basically would not even admit to its existence for like another 15 years. It's called Ghost Watch. Now, if you're across the pond over in the UK and you're listening to this, you probably already know what I'm talking about, because despite the backlash that this film got, it also ended up inspiring a whole generation of writers and directors in England to go out and do their own thing, heavily inspired by this. So, what was Ghost Watch? Well, again, it was a television film. It was about an hour long. Let's see. 91 minutes to be exact, so it was an hour and a half. Hey, I can't do math.
You don't have to, it's Friday.
Yeah. And it shot as if, okay, so it was originally produced for Screen One, which was a anthology series that was being shown on the BBC at the time. Now, originally, the creator of this film, Stephen Volk, had the idea of making this into a mini series where it would have been like, and it would have like followed the way the format would have worked is it would have been like a mockumentary type thing on different types of hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would work the same way that, you know, those horror mockumentary horror movies work. But unfortunately, he couldn't get the budget for it. And ultimately, what ended up happening is that he basically had to shrink it down into a single film. And so he decided to think, okay, what can I do to work around this? Like, what can I do to work around this? So I've only got an hour. I've only got about an hour and a half. I can, you know, I don't have a big budget, but I can. But I got access to the resources here at the BBC. What can I do with this? This is what he did. First of all, he got a gentleman by the name of Michael Parkinson, who, for those who don't know, Sir Michael Parkinson is a fairly well-known and famous broadcaster, news broadcaster on the BBC. Mm. And he got him to play as himself. He also got Sarah Green, who was also another English television presenter, and Mike Smith, who some of you may have heard of, may have known him as one of the guys who was on Red Dwarf.
Yeah.
Yeah, he plays himself in this too. And so what they did is they simulated a program that would essentially be the sort of idea was it would be about an hour and a half long live program. It wasn't actually live, for the record. An hour and a half long live program in which they would be investigating a instance of a poltergeist in Northolt, in Greater London, at this, basically this house. Now, at the beginning of the film, as it's going on, again, this is meant to be like, it's meaning to be like a live presentation. The reporters are sort of not taking the story very seriously. They play pranks on each other. They have viewers that are asked to call in with their own ghost stories. There's a woman named Dr. Lynn Pasco, who's supposed to be like a paranormal expert who attempts to explain all the events going on in the house. And basically, the story in the house itself is that there's this malevolent ghost that the kids keep calling Pipes because they keep hearing these banging noises inside the pipes, and so the kids would be saying, Pipes is here! And, you know, as the story is going on, several viewers are calling in with their own experiences. As the experiences go on, they start to become more violent, more dangerous, and in some ways even seem to be related to the show itself. Eventually, it's learned that Pipes is the spirit of a man named Raymond Tunstall, who was said to be troubled by the spirit of a woman named Mother Settins, who was a baby farmer turned child killer from the 19th century. Those did actually exist, by the way.
Really?
Baby farmers, those were a real thing.
Oh, God.
And then eventually the camera catches one of the kids making banging noises on the pipe to get people watching to believe her family's story. So it's at that point they think, okay, this is a hoax. And so they're getting ready to sort of say, okay, this whole thing is a hoax. We're going to, you know, we're going to move on. And as they're saying this, one of the guys who's in charge of like recording, you know, getting all of the phone call stories from people, he starts saying, he says, look, people who've been calling in, they've been saying that there's been stuff showing up in the footage that we haven't noticed. And sure enough, if you go back and watch the early parts of the movie, you'll start seeing these kind of like shadows or like vaguely images of a random man that seems to be standing in the corner.
Okay.
And it's at that point that basically the whole thing goes fucking off the rails. These wounds start showing up on the kids' faces. The noises start getting louder. The TV signal starts like getting scrambled, and this image of this bald man starts randomly popping up. And then finally, Dr. Pasco, who is, you know, the paranormal expert, says, you know, program itself, because all of these people are watching, it's kind of been acting like a whole national seance, which, you know, if Pipes was smart enough, he could actually use it to gain horrific power. And then the spirit finally shows up in the studio itself. It drags Sarah Green out of sight behind a door. Then it starts expressing poltergeist activity all through the country. He takes control of the BBC studios and the transmitter network, uses Ghostwatch Studio as a focal point. Everybody runs out of the studio. The lights explode. The only person left is Michael Parkinson. Walking around sort of in the dark saying, you know, we're still on the air, but there's no cameraman. Cameras are on, but apparently the telescreen's still on. And then he reads the what it says on there. And it happens to be a nursery rhyme, which up to this point, the film has shown that saying a specific nursery rhyme basically gives Michael Pipes control over you. And then he starts speaking through in Pipe's voice, asking if they really believe the story about Mother Seddons. And then he calls out fee, fi, fo, fum, and then the movie ends.
Oh my god. Okay, that's a little creepy.
Got 30,000 calls on the switchboard in a single hour after the film went off the air.
Oh my god. I don't know what the problem is. That sounds awesome.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. That type of film did not exist back then.
Does now.
Yeah, remember, yeah.
They were using Michael Parkinson playing as himself, a trusted broadcaster, and two other individuals who were playing themselves. And the complete, like, advertisement that this – even though the film, like, at the beginning showed, you know, what you were about to watch is fiction, et cetera, even though if you called into the number that they would show on the screen, there would be a recorded message telling you that you were watching a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Most people did not get that.
Oh, boy.
So there were basically little kids on Halloween night – who watched this on the BBC?
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes. Oh, and it gets worse because there was a kid, a guy, he was 18 years old. His name was Martin Denham. He was a factory worker who had learning and mental difficulties. He had the mental age of 13.
Mm-hmm.
5 days after the show ended, he started hearing banging noises in his pipes.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
he committed suicide.
Aww.
For those who don't know, in these types of houses, the reason you hear those knocking noises in pipes is usually because of a central heating system that's gone faulty.
Or radiators, yeah. It's radiators knock like mad.
Yeah. There's actually a report in the British Medical Journal from February 1994 that describes two cases of post-traumatic stress disorder that was induced in children, both 10-year-old boys who watched the show that night.
Oh my god.
There were further four cases, between 11 and 14, as well as one case in an 8-year-old that stemmed from, that also is believed to have been related to it. Apparently there was a similar response with some elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
But as the article states, the rapid resolution of the children's symptoms suggests that the children suffered a brief anxiety reaction to the television program. Although they may have exhibited some of the features of post-traumatic stress disorder, this diagnosis in their cases is inappropriate.
Yeah.
It would probably not surprise you to know that the people who made the Blair Witch Project had seen this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Like I said, it has never since been broadcasted on the BBC. They finally released it on DVD in 2011. And then in 2012, 2013, they actually released a documentary called Ghostwatch Behind the Curtains, where they interviewed all the people that were involved in the making of it and, like, the whole controversy that came out of it. Yeah. Yeah, if you ever get a chance, you can actually, I'm pretty sure you can watch all of it on YouTube if you search hard enough. But, yeah, so that has been a spooky rendition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Yeah, and not the only time the BBC has freaked.
Oh yeah,
we'll talk about the other.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, with that, it is now time to start with the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we start off with our asshole of the week. And our asshole of the week this year is BG&E.
Again.
Yeah, because it looks like they may have started the wildfire in California.
Yeah. You know, the one that they were trying to prevent by cutting people's power?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Pacific Gas and Electric, California's biggest utility, says a broken jumper wire was found on a transmission tower near where the raging Kincade fire broke out 2 days ago in Northern California.
Yep. Jeez. Yeah, so this is kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, you guys should be on top of this shit.
Yeah.
It says registered outage at the tower at about 9:20 p.m. on Wednesday, only 7 minutes before the fire erupted near the Sonoma County wine country town of Geyserville. It's 5% contained as of today. Burned about 290 buildings, forced evacuation of 2,000 people. Mm. And so, yeah, not been a good couple of weeks for them because they did the power shutoffs a few weeks ago and somebody died pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's really something that pisses me off because last year, like, they were given $100 million by the government to get their shit in order.
Yeah, and guess where all that money went?
Yeah, they gave them to their board as bonuses.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So
that's almost as infuriating as the Sally Mae Hawaii trip that you guys talked about last week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. This doesn't bankroll because now they actually have proof.
Yeah.
I don't.
Also, Gavin Newsom is governor now. Mm-hmm. And he is probably going to do some shit. We have to say it again. Do you want the French Revolution?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is how you get the French Revolution.
This is how we get,
this is how you get guillotines. This is how you get barricades in the streets.
This is how we get state-provided electricity because, you know, that really is a critical component to human life right now.
Yeah.
It totally is.
So, yeah.
Well, yes, treat it as a public utility.
Yep.
Like internet.
Imagine that.
You don't have to imagine it. Pretty much every other country on the planet already does it. But anyway. So to wipe that taste out of our mouths, we've got our hero of the week. And it's a high school coach who managed to stop a shooting in Oregon in the most pure and wholesome way ever.
Mm-hmm.
He gave him a hug.
Yeah, no. So this happened, back in May. Park Rose High School in Oregon. The video just leaked recently, so that's how more people found out about this. But yeah, it shows that the coach, Keenan Lowe,
mm-hmm.
Initially moving away from the students, but then going in and hugging him and sort of telling him, he said, I saw the look in his face, look in his eyes, looked at the gun, realized it was a real gun, and then my instincts just took over. I lunged for the gun, put two hands on the gun. He says in a tweet he put out around the time this happened, when I signed up to be a security guard, football and track and field coach for Park Rose High School, did so to guide and coach young people whose shoes I had once been in. I had no idea that I would one day have to put my life on the line like I did yesterday for my students. He said he felt compassion for the kid, Obviously, he broke down, and I just wanted to let him know that I was there for him. I told him I was there to save him. I was there for a reason, and that his life was worth living. Let's see. Yeah, you can watch a video of it. But yeah, so they booked the kid on charges of possession of a firearm in a public building, attempting to discharge a firearm at a school, reckless endangerment, possession of a loaded firearm in a public place. But it was only loaded with one round. I pled guilty to charges on to the charges on October 10th. A 36-month probation sentence. As part of the plea agreement, he's receiving mental health and substance abuse treatment. So hopefully that goes well for him.
Yeah, I hope he continues to get support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe other kids, you know, maybe they'll get a hug too.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Sometimes life sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Hey, you see this, GOP? There's no gun involved.
Well, stop I mean, there him. Was a gun involved, but it wasn't used to stop him.
Yeah.
All right. We don't know what hugging is. That's
because hugging is for choirs.
That might be what they think.
Anyway.
It's for the lady folk.
What them, what have the part in the side, in the middle, that ain't like I got.
That we control, not them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we want to keep living in a period of toxic masculinity where men can't express any kind of emotion whatsoever.
No.
Except rage.
Yeah.
So healthy.
All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now time for the proper show proper. And we are starting off with, of course, this week's installment of Impeachment Watch. All right. Here we go. First and foremost, Donald Trump actually mocked the Emoluments Clause and called it, quote, phony.
The Emoluments Clause that have been in place how long?
Since the country was founded.
Yeah,
fake news, though, right? You know, it's in every goddamn history book, but it's fake news.
Donald Trump hasn't read any history books, apparently.
Trump hasn't read any books, except
Mein Kampf.
I don't
think he can read.
Not even his own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he said, let's see. Hey, speaking to reporters in the White House cabinet room, Trump dismissed a section of the Constitution that bars federal office holders from accepting gifts from foreign governments. You people with this phony emoluments clause. I'm surprised you could say that word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
It's a monuments clause. That's probably what he would actually say. Let's see. Yeah, and sort of it'll lead into what we talk a little bit later with the Trump National Doral Resorts. But yeah, he was saying that in response to that, his reversal of that. He said, I would have given it for nothing. Democrats went crazy, even though I would have done it free. Trump also rejected criticism and he personally profited from hosting it at his Florida club. I don't need promotion. It would have been the best G7 ever.
Oh, god damn it.
That's promotion, you idiot.
God.
Yeah, he didn't end there because later on he then compared the current impeachment inquiry into, quote, a lynching.
Really, motherfucker? Yeah.
Use that word.
You and your white goddamn privilege and your rich goddamn privilege dare?
Oh, he has experience with lynching. Demanding lynching, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, let's see, tweeted out, so someday if a Democrat becomes president, the Republicans win the House, even by a tiny margin, they can impeach the president without due process or fairness or any legal rights. All Republicans must remember what they are witnessing here, a lynching, but we will win.
Uh-huh. Go fuck yourself with a pineapple.
That's nutritious for him.
There's Rep. Bobby Rush from Illinois.
Oh, yeah. He had a bunch of his sycophants come out and agree with him, too.
Yeah, he said, you think this impeachment is lying? What the hell is wrong with you? Do you know how many people who look like me have been lynched since the inception of this country? By people who look like you. Delete this tweet.
Yep.
I see Rep. Adam Kinzinger from Illinois. We can all disagree on the process and argue merits, but never should we use terms like lynching here. The painful scourge in our history has no comparison to politics, and real Donald Trump should retract this immediately. May God help us to return to a better way.
Yeah.
That was a Republican saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's managing to burn all of his bridges.
Yeah, yeah, he is. But it gets better, because, you know how we've been wanting, like, somebody to actually, like, give, like, solid evidence of a quid pro quo?
Yeah.
Well, the top U.S. diplomat that is in Ukraine, Bill Taylor, he actually testified before the inquiry this week. And, yeah, he confirmed it.
Yep. Basically saying that he was there. Let's see. In fact, Ambassador Sondland said everything was dependent on such an announcement, including security assistance, testified, and that Trump wanted Zelensky in a public box by making a statement about ordering the investigations. Yeah, so he wanted that, kind of basically made sure everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then.
It keeps going.
Oh, yeah. You guys know Matt Gaetz. He's like one of the most, he has like one of the most punchable faces in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, he tried to lead a GOP mob to break into the inquiry hearings with their phones out.
Yeah, to make sure to kind of tape what was going on, which is illegal.
Yeah.
And
it's also those rules, they weren't created out of thin air. Those rules were signed into law by the Republican House under Speaker John Boehner.
Yeah, let's see.
Yeah.
In 2015.
Yeah, so Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense Laura Cooper was set to testify. What morning was this? Wednesday. On Trump's shady dealings with Ukraine, but Gaetz and more than two dozen other Republican wingnuts decided to protest the closed impeachment hearings by storming the secure room of the Capitol building and documenting it all on their phones. As many, many, many experts, as are linking here, have already pointed out, this is a clear violation of security protocol that will more than likely lead to multiple ethics citations. Let's see, the Daily Beast wrote, the standoff began shortly after a press conference in the morning, which GOP members denounced what they call Democrats' sham impeachment process, a complaint that they've made central to their impeachment pushback. According to Democratic lawmakers in a room, the Republicans blew past police officers to enter the room, began shouting once they got there, loudly denouncing the process and impeaching the impeachment in general. Close to 2 hours after they first went in, a core group of Republicans remained there, according to a tweet from Rep. Andy Briggs of Arizona. Number two House Republican, Rep. Steve Scalise from Louisiana, was with them. 3 hours into the standoff, Republicans' crew remained, and they ordered pizza from We the Pizza, a Capitol Hill joint.
Oh, they're just going to sit in, huh?
Yeah. They also asked to be arrested.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
They weren't, by the
way.
They
want to be martyrs.
Yeah. They didn't give it to them, though.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And,
I guess, Andy Biggs, yeah, said he, tweeted that he was reporting from Adam Schiff's secret chamber. There's still about 15 Republican members in the SCIF.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Gaetz, Steve Scalise, Mark Walker, and himself. Let's see, they say here, since Florida is always present in history's dumbest moments, a few of the Sunshine State's finest were also part of this mass stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
Besides Gaetz, Rep. Ross Spano of Florida's 15th District and Rep. Michael Waltz of the 16th District could also be seen in the gaggle. It's hard to imagine that this is anything more than a desperate Hail Mary to thwart the impeachment inquiry. Oddly, what today's disruption failed to mention was that there were already Republicans on the three panels conducting the impeachment investigation. So calling the proceedings politically motivated, lagging transparency, makes absolutely no sense. Mm-hmm. Is what due process looks like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's like roughly like a good percentage of the Republicans in the House are in those
yeah
hearings.
And a distressing number of Americans who believe they aren't actually there.
Yeah.
Where do they believe they are, then, exactly? Mars?
Well, they want to paint it as a completely Democrat
thing. Yeah, because here's the thing. You know that they've lost when they have to start attacking the actual process.
Yeah.
Because they can't defend Trump on his own merits anymore.
No. And he was recently saying, like, he doesn't need a team. He is the team.
Mm-hmm.
For that, so...
And the bipartisan nature of this suddenly takes a giant shit on the narrative.
Yeah.
Good gosh. This is at least entertaining as fuck to live through.
Mm-hmm.
Fury infuriating, but, you know, also entertaining.
Yeah.
Oh, it gets much worse. Get ready for this.
Oh, no.
The former acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker.
Yeah.
Went on, what was it? Was it Fox?
I believe so.
Yeah.
It was always Fox.
It was either Fox or he was talking to Stephanopoulos on his show, which isn't on Fox, but... And he basically...
He was on Fox News.
Yeah, he was on Fox News. All right. And he said, and I'm quoting, that... I'm a former prosecutor, and what I know is that this is a perfectly timed... Hold on. Fucking pay a little. I'm a former prosecutor, and what I know is this is a perfect time for a preliminary hearing where you could say, show us your evidence. What evidence of a crime do you have? That's what we're doing right now.
Yes.
What does he think is going on here?
I mean, the Constitution, you know, abuse of power is not a crime. Let's fundamentally boil it down to, you know, the Constitution is very clear that this has to be some pretty egregious behavior, and they cannot tell the American people what this case is even about. First of all, motherfucker.
Yeah. We all...
You don't have to have impeached to have committed an actual felony to be impeached.
And also, it's been pretty clear what's... The specific issues are.
Exactly.
Also, abuse of power is a crime.
And I'm pretty sure there are several felonies involved as well. So,
and this has been talked about as far back as when the Federalist Papers were fucking published and fucking Alexander Hamilton was talking about this shit.
Oh my God.
See, this is why, folks, you need to pay attention to your political process, because if you don't, you end up with idiots like that.
Yeah, my brother, who is apolitical, even said maybe we should have some sort of competency test before they get to run for anything.
Yeah.
You know what? Honestly... I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with that if it weren't for the fact that those competency tests could very, with a little work, be engineered in such a way as to keep anyone who is not white out of the process.
That is true. Standardized testing is horribly, horribly skewed towards white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Yeah.
very, very much so. But... what he was saying is we need to make sure they have at least a third grade intelligence. Hmm. That was about where he was going with this.
Yeah.
And
I guess. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
You know?
Also a reverse age gate.
Yeah.
Hmm. I didn't think about that.
So for those who don't know, here in the United States, in order to qualify to be president, you actually have to be 35 years or older.
Yeah.
I actually think that's too high. Mm-hmm. I think it should be around 30.
Yep.
At least.
I could see 25.
Yeah, I could see 25 as well.
And I don't think the wrong 25-year-olds would try to run for president. They wouldn't get far. Well, okay.
Yeah.
I redact that statement.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, that's more or less the official impeachment watch, but we do have some stuff that's tangentially related. Specifically, guess who's been butt-dialing again? Rudy Giuliani.
Our favorite Muppet.
Yeah, so...
he butt-dialed another reporter.
Yeah, this actually happened last week. October 16th. They're reporting about it now, of course, but this actually happened. So basically what happened is he ended up butt-tiling a reporter that I guess
he'd been talking to about other stuff.
Yeah. Apparently this came in at like 11:07 p.m., so the reporter was already in bed at this point. So it went to voicemail. So the reporter gets up, checks the next morning, checks the phone, sees there's a message that's 3 minutes long, and he ends up hearing basically a whole conversation that Giuliani is having. And it just makes all this shit even worse.
Yeah, and this is the second time that it's happened in a month, I believe.
Yeah.
Which is just, somebody's got to take these old people's phones away. And I'm starting to question the entire, I don't know what, the competency level of every generation that's gone before mine, maybe mine too. Do we just like kind of wing it through life? Like we kind of winged it to the moon on a hope and a fucking prayer? I mean,
I'm starting to believe that the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, because people just don't seem to know how to fucking function. And it seems like maybe that whole generation was just throwing shit against the wall and hoping that something stuck. I mean, what? What's the deal? I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Yeah.
I think old Rudy here, just at least if he's going to have shady conversations, he should probably take his phone out of his pocket at this point.
Yeah.
He's God.
For fuck's sake, dude.
Is this like one of those instances? Is this like a the producer's level scam here?
I wondered.
Like, is he doing this so shitty on purpose?
To throw us off the scent of what?
Either that, or he's trying to hide someone else so he can throw someone else under the bus.
Or is he trying to seem grossly incompetent? I mean, is it
so that he can plead insanity or something like that?
Yeah. Is it calculated or plead early dementia or something?
I mean, keep in mind, Giuliani was a mob lawyer for like 20-something years. So,
and see, something like that, you don't really have to be smart. You just have to be connected and have muscle behind you.
Yeah.
So that's another thing in my, are they all really fucking incompetent? I can't figure this out.
Well, think on that.
I'm just going to go with Occam's razor on this one and go, usually the simplest answer is usually the right one.
Yes.
And the simplest answer is that they're all fucking idiots, but they're also well connected.
So if they're all idiots and they're the generation before mine, does that mean that my generation is going to be all idiots when we get that age?
Well, no, because these were all the people that grew up after the 60s and voted Reagan.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I remember them being so proud when he was fucking elected. Fuck that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, in other news, Emmett Till is getting a new bulletproof memorial in Mississippi. Now, you guys know who Emmett Till is, right?
Yes.
Okay, very briefly, for those of you outside of the United States who may not know who Emmett Till was, Emmett Till is kind of the guy who really got the civil rights movement rolling, and the reason was because he was basically this 14-year-old kid from Chicago, Illinois, who was in Mississippi for like family stuff or something. And supposedly he whistled at a white woman. Now the reason I say supposedly is that several years later, the woman who kickstarted the whole thing basically admitted that she made it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Basically for whistling at a white woman, he was beaten, shot, and then thrown into the Mississippi River.
Like, just brutalized.
Yeah, he basically was slowly tortured and mutilated the kid.
Well, he was pistol whipped beyond recognition. The only way that they recognized him was that, like, records. No, I think it was like a ring or something that he
had. Oh, yeah, he had a ring on his, I think it was his left hand.
Yeah. And then his mom said, we're not having a closed casket.
We're doing an open casket.
Look at what these bastards did to my baby.
Yeah.
And it was
that they took a picture of it. That picture went up all over the country. It went international. And basically, it's what really galvanized the civil rights movement into a major force in the United States. I mean, there had been a civil rights movement in the United States before then. But this is what sort of carried it over into the mainstream.
This was the outrage that ignited it into a wildfire. I think it was Bo
from the Fifth Column basically put it like Emmett Till was basically the sacrificial lamb that got the whole ball rolling. So the reason they need a bulletproof one is because it keeps getting vandalized and shot at. Because
people are still fucking assholes.
Yeah. The good thing is the new memorial they've made for it is stainless steel, and it's made from, I think, AR-500. So it actually can't melt at anything under 500 degrees.
Okay.
So it's basically indestructible.
Yeah. Let's see. The first sign they put up was in 2008. Someone tossed it in the river. Second and third signs were shot at and left riddled with bullet holes. And obviously people took pictures and videos of themselves in front of the sign with their guns and all that. It's obviously white people doing this. It sort of just shows you how stupid people are. One, for doing it, and two, for documenting it for everybody else to know. But yeah, they got Patrick Weems, executive director of the Emmett Till Memorial Commission. They put this up last Saturday. Said, for 50 years, nobody talked about Emmett Till. I think we just have to be resilient. No, there are folks out there that don't want to know this history or want to erase the history. We're just going to be resilient and continuing to put them back up. Mm-hmm. Be truthful in making sure that Emmett didn't die in vain. And they had some of his family there at the ceremony. But yeah, that's it's sad that it has to be bulletproof, made bulletproof.
I wholeheartedly agree with you.
When did you say the last one was tossed into the river, the first one?
It doesn't say when, it just says someone tossed it in the river. But that was put up in 2008.
Gee, I wonder what was happening in 2008.
Wasn't that about the time all the shit with St. Louis? The kid that
there was also a certain individual who was elected president that year.
Oh, yeah, no. 2000.
Obama.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been that long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
And been over a decade. Too. Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah.
Next up in major stories in the world, the government in Hong Kong officially withdrew the controversial extradition bill. Which, so as you know, that was basically the straw that broke the camel's back in Hong Kong. And it's why Hong Kong's basically been on fire 24/7 for the last few months.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing. Basically, even though the political parties in Hong Kong basically act on the behest of Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, Beijing themselves are like, yeah, we're just going to
walk away from this one.
Yeah. I said this last time on the Day Zero update when we were talking about the Blizzard stuff. Hong Kong isn't actually a major economic port for China anymore. Honestly, if China really wanted to, all they would have to do is cut the cord.
Yeah.
Pride
probably won't let them.
Yeah, there's a... Well, I mean, the thing about... You got to remember, Hong Kong was originally a British colony.
Yeah, for like 125 damn years.
Yeah, and the Chinese, no matter their political persuasions, are not very fond of the fact that they used to be a colony.
Yeah.
And that still extends into today. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it's because, you know, the Communist Party of China is, you know, okay, let me put it this way. You know how we've said before that nobody earns $1 billion, they steal it?
Yeah.
Yeah, guess who happens to have a sizable number of members in the Communist Party of China? Billionaires!
Yeah.
That kind of seems to go against the whole idea, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So basically, the CPC is currently staffed by a council of thieves.
Really, really strange when you look at what's going on in China, because they're a country that seems to want to have its cake and eat it too.
Oh, yeah. And that's especially true of China stands. Holy shit. You know, in the left-wing circles I run with, you'll come across people all the fucking time who will do every goddamn thing they possibly can to defend China. Including with the shit that's going on in Hong Kong right now.
That's just fucking weird.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they vote against their own self-interest all the goddamn time. Why should we be even slightly...
No, surprised? These are left-wingers. Left-wingers. Like hardcore socialists.
Oh, I heard that
Marxist,
wrong.
Marxist-Leninists, communists, those types, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but... And, of course, you tell them about the fact that, you know, the Communist Party is staffed by billionaires, which is like that does not compute.
It literally doesn't.
Just start seeing curls of smoke coming out of their brains.
Like, yeah. Nope. Anyway. But that's a whole other fucking thing I don't want to get into right now, because we will not have the goddamn time for the rest of this shit. Yeah. Next up, Mitt Romney confirmed that he actually has an alt Twitter account named Pierre Delecto.
Why?
Exactly. Why?
So he can talk shit about other Republicans that he hates.
So it's a troll account.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Where's they got some stuff from him? Yeah, they took pictures of it because he made it private.
Mm-hmm.
It was username at QAWS9876. Mm. You know, the most original name of, like, looking at the keyboard. hitting keys that are near each other.
Yeah.
Maybe that's his password.
Yeah, his account joined the site in July 2011, just 1 month after Romney announced his run for president. Majority of people it follows are either political reporters, politicians, political operatives, or pundits. Though it does follow noted big redhead of Boston, Conan O'Brien.
Oh.
Appears to be a fan of the late night hosts Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon too, as well as current former NFL players Tom Brady and Brett Favre. Follows 702 accounts, which is a few more than the 668 Romney admitted to Coppins. It's certainly possible to follow 30 additional accounts over the course of a few weeks. Let's see. Very first follow was Eldest Romney Scion Tag, joined shortly thereafter by Glenn Johnson, a former politics editor for Boston.com. It's firmly on the Romney beats around the time the account was originally created. Next was Mark DeMoss, who the Salt Lake Tribune described in 2012 as an unpaid advisor to Mitt Romney's presidential campaign for the past 5 years. Eric Fahrenstrom, who still has former Mitt Romney advisor in his Twitter bio. Generally, the account follows everyone you might expect someone like Mitt Romney to follow, like Charles Krauthammer, like John McCain, Larry Kudlow, Robert Murdoch, Bill Kristol, Matt Schaap, and who else but Peggy Noonan. It also follows all the people you would expect someone who is exactly Mitt Romney to follow, all the available Mitt Romney children, number of former Mitt Romney advisors and aides. Quite a few reporters who've directly covered Romney or his various campaigns.
Well, none of this is juicy. Where's the juicy shit? See. Why is this even noteworthy?
It's Mitt Romney. There's no juicy shit.
Yeah.
The man is as white bread as it comes.
It's true.
So the accounts is hard to imagine anyone.
Missionary only or something? I mean, there's...
Yes.
Why is this even newsworthy?
Let's see.
Well, it's newsworthy because
then
Mitt's
we have the
been...
tweets. Yeah, Pierre has only ever tweeted 10 times total.
Oh.
All of them have been replies to other tweets. Certainly, the sort of behavior one might expect to see from a self-described lurker. Account's first tweet, coming a whole 4 years after its initial create registration, was show frustration at Fox News for not yet having a New Hampshire presidential poll up. So he's like a very boring
person. Be specific, the reason that it's newsworthy is because Mitt's been one of the major critics of Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So anything related to him is going to be news.
But this is like what my grandmother ate for lunch type of news.
Yeah.
It's just like,
There's a series of tweets defending his honor. Let's see. Yeah, as one, he's responding to Jennifer Rubin. So, Jennifer, you need to take a breath. Maybe you can acknowledge the people who agree with you in large measure, even if not in every measure. Let's see. Yeah. Let's
see. Yeah, it's just it's dumb shit.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so next up. The UN did a study that found that $300 billion could actually help push climate change down the road for another 15, 20 years.
Let's fucking do it and get some science going. Holy shit, what are we waiting for?
Yeah, somebody call Jeff Bezos.
Do you know how many billionaires
we have? And show up at his front door with a revolver and say, hand it over.
Do you want to guess how many billionaires we have in the world?
What?
Far too many.
75?
Anybody else? Numbers?
It's going to be like in the hundreds or thousands.
God. 2,604.
Yep.
Oh, God. I was never
you,
any
you
good
could take that many out in a weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, the let's see, $300 billion, that's what the UN's study, let's see, which part of it? The UN Convention to Combat Desertification. Which this is what it's about. It's kind of that there's a bunch of land on this earth that has been desertified, that has turned into kind of, let's see, of the 2 billion hectares, almost 5 billion acres of land around the world has been degraded by misuse, overgrazing, deforestation, and other largely human factors. 900 million hectares could be restored.
Okay.
Returning that land to pasture, food crops, or trees would convert enough carbon into biomass to stabilize the emissions of CO2, the biggest greenhouse gas, for about 15 to 20 years, giving the world time to adopt carbon-neutral technologies. Castro Salazar is the Assistant General Director at the UN Food and Agricultural Organization. Said, with political will and investment of about $300 billion, it is doable. We will be using the least cost options we have while waiting for technologies in energy and transportation to mature and be fully available in the market. We'll stabilize the atmospheric changes, the fight against climate change for 15 to 20 years. We very much need that.
Yes.
Yeah, the heart of the idea is tackle the growing problem of desertification, degradation of dry land to the point where it can support little life. Mm-hmm. At least a third of the world's land has been degraded to some extent, directly affecting the lives of 2 billion people. And yeah, if you read any like climate change information, like that's definitely one of the big issues.
Yeah.
Is a lot of places, especially in like Africa, that's where the land can no longer be used to farm.
Mm-hmm. And
that causes a lot of issues and forces people to have to migrate to new places. Yeah, the idea is to put more carbon into the soil. That's not going to be a simple thing because of the natural conditions. But keeping the carbon in the soil and getting that natural vegetation, grazing land, etc., thriving again, that's the key.
If you go to the top 300, you ask them each for $1
billion. Mm-hmm.
Job done.
You can ask extra from Bezos because he's a trillionaire. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy that one man could potentially save the planet?
No, not really. It's, well, yeah, kind of, but it's also not unexpected that one man could get that much money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So, next up. In other parts that's not really related to Impeachment Watch, but kind of unofficially is, Trump will not be using Trump National Doral for 2020 G7 summit. Because he announced it, and then within the space of 48 hours, he retracted it because he got so much shit for it from both sides of the aisle.
I mean, at least fumigate first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he said, or he tweeted, "We will no longer consider Trump National Doral in Miami as the host site for the G7 in 2020. We'll begin the search for another site, including the possibility of Camp David, immediately." And yeah, kind of got shit for both sides, but he also criticized people. I thought I was doing something very good for our country by using Trump National Doral in Miami for hosting the G7 leaders. Guy just keeps going to an ad.
You fucking transparent fuck. We know what you were trying to do. Line your pockets again.
Yeah, he's predictable at this point.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's at least that.
Which I did not think would actually happen at some point. But yeah, he is actually legit predictable now.
We also didn't think he would be president long enough for us to establish what his routines are going to be, so we know how to deal with the toddler's temper tantrums.
Yeah.
Yet, here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I'm catty tonight. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. It's all right. You've earned it. Anyway. Moving up. And this is the story out of Phil's part of the world. Trudeau won Canada's election. But the Liberals do not have a majority, so it's going to be a Liberal minority government. Yeah. And there's actually a lot of people in Canada who are excited about that, and there's a good reason. You know why? Because it means they have to build a coalition with the National Democratic Party, which means that all that social democratic center-left shit that they usually have to drag the fucking Liberals into doing, they're a bit more pliable with it now.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Any predictions?
That now that the election has happened, nobody's talking about it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, especially because nothing's... At least there's no, like, overhaul of the cabinet.
No.
Really.
Not a whole lot.
So it's like, all right, we'll continue. It's Thursday now.
You know, he's campaigning. We're not looking at 2022 or anything like that right now.
No.
So. Jeez. Right?
Yeah. Doesn't that sound nice?
Yeah. It really does. I'm glad you guys don't have to put up with the kind of shit that...
Our campaign period is 3 months.
Yeah. I respect that.
Yeah. I wish we could do that here.
Yeah. And maybe someday we will. Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah, though I see there's some weirders that want... what are they calling it? Phil Wexit?
Oh, God.
The Western provinces want to leave.
Secede.
There you go. You can be Alaska's bitch.
Quebec's been trying to do that for you.
No.
Yeah.
Especially when it's kind of snug fit in there. It's not really.
I was just going to say, isn't Quebec spots. Like landlocked?
Yeah, we're kind of stuck. It's like, yeah.
But yeah, anyway.
That's not stopping some elements.
Yeah.
Well. Next up, over in India. Okay, so this story sounds absurd on the surface.
Someone, Brandon, right here.
Oh, yeah, sorry for that. Before we get to that, over in the UK, the MPs have voted to delay Brexit again, forcing Boris to go to the EU again to ask for a delay again. And although we don't have it on here, there is an addendum to this. He's also calling for new elections next month.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he wants to even win at this point.
Mm-hmm.
He will have the shortest term as prime minister in history.
Yeah.
But that
very much seems like what could happen.
Yeah.
I'm starting to seriously believe that Brexit is not going to happen.
No. I certainly fucking hope it's not going to happen.
I saw a good joke that... there'll be the yearly tradition of pushing the delay back.
Yeah.
And that'll be 300 years from now. They'll wonder what the tradition even started, how this
began.
Why
you get the day off work and shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brexit day.
It's like, oh, and they voted to delay it again. Hey! We'll see you guys again next year.
Hey. Yeah, but like, I really am serious. I don't think it's going to happen at this point. It's become increasingly obvious that the majority of the people in the UK don't want it.
Yeah.
And that there are now parties like the Liberal Democrats who have put forth and said, if we get a majority in Parliament, we are officially going to cancel Brexit. So, yeah, it's not going to happen.
It's either not going to happen because of incompetency or because somebody finally is able to step up and
just say, you know what? Fuck you people.
Yeah.
You're all daft. This is bollocks.
It's the British way.
Yeah. Anyway.
It is.
Anyway, next up, over in India. And this story, it sounds absurd on the surface, but there is a reason for it. Okay, so in India, there is a private college that has forced students there to wear cardboard boxes over their heads during their exams.
I read this wrong. Okay, India.
India, yeah.
Got it.
Okay, so here's the thing. In a lot of these private schools in India, because they're like, because so many people are so desperate to get into them, cheating is very widespread. And I don't mean just regular cheating. I mean like organized cheating, where people actually coordinate and shit.
Yeah.
And so to deal with that, they have officially forced the students to wear cardboard boxes on their heads so that they can't, you know.
I'm sure that's a lovely thing for the teachers to have to do. Sit there and cut
I'm looking at the picture, and the teacher seems to have a smirk on her face.
Oh, yeah, it says here, shockingly, in order to show how they conduct exams using this method, a member of the college management posted an image of students wearing corrugated boxes in the classroom on social media. It went viral within no time and evoked angry responses from the public. Post was deleted once management saw the backlash. It's like, okay, you guys are stupid and think you're the greatest people in the world. You have the best idea of just put boxes on everybody's heads. Instead of, like, I don't know, putting up dividers between the ones that are sitting next to each other.
Yeah, but see, that would cost money.
Yeah.
And if you think American corporations are fucking stingy.
I mean, they got cardboard. They got tons of it.
Yeah.
They could fucking build this these walls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a different kind of craft project from the one they were doing.
Yeah,
pretty much. anyway, next up. Researchers found a man who was pulled over on suspicion of driving under the influence. And when they examined him, they found out that his stomach actually produced alcohol.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that's a superpower is what that is.
Yeah, so he's in his late 40s at the time, refused to take a breathalyzer test, was taken to a hospital where his initial blood alcohol levels found to be 0.2%, about 2.5 times the legal limit and the equivalent of consuming 10 drinks an hour. Despite the man swearing up and down that he hadn't anything to drink, doctors didn't believe him either. But the researchers at Richmond University Medical Center in New York eventually discovered that he was telling the truth. There was yeast in his gut that was likely converting carbohydrates in the food he ate to alcohol. In other words, his body was brewing beer. This is an actual thing called auto-brewery system, known as gut fermentation syndrome. Occurs when yeast in the gastrointestinal tract causes the body to convert carbohydrates ingested through food into alcohol. The process typically takes place in the upper GI tract, which includes the stomach and the first part of the small intestines. These patients have the exact same implications of alcoholism, the smell, breath, drowsiness, gait changes. They will present as somebody who's intoxicated by alcohol, but the only difference here is that these patients can be treated by antifungal medications. And so, yeah, that's kind of how they treat him.
Yep.
The man was successfully treated at the Ohio Clinic and told to stick to a strict carbohydrate-free diet along with some special supplements. After a few weeks, the symptoms started to flare up again. This time, no treatment seemed to work despite visits to numerous medical professionals. At one point, the man became so inebriated that he fell and experienced bleeding in his brain. He was taken to a neurosurgical center. Ray spontaneously recovered in 10 days. His blood alcohol levels range from 50 to 400 milligrams per DL. Let's see. Here, too, the medical staff refused to believe that he did not drink alcohol despite his persistent denials. Sought help from an online support group and got in touch with researchers at Richmond. Yeah.
That's good where they gosh.
Wow.
Good. Yeah, these the antifungal therapies, probiotics to help normalize the bacteria in his gut. Treatment that he's continued, aside from one relapse that occurred after he binged on pizza and soda without telling the researchers, seemed to be working. And now he can eat pizza again. Approximately 1.5 years later, he remains asymptomatic and has resumed his previous lifestyle, including eating a normal diet while still checking his breath alcohol levels sporadically.
Gosh, that is weird as fuck.
Yeah, the notion that you could just get drunk by eating some pizza or having some bread or whatever. That's pretty weird, but
really it's a goddamn superpower.
See, a difference of opinion
Jesus in the analysts
here. Depends on the situation.
Yeah. I'll have what he's having.
There's a lot of money on beer, huh?
Yeah. But, you know, drinking beer, part of the fun of drinking beer is the actual experience of drinking the beer. It cuts that part out.
But it adds the experience of eating more pizza.
Mm-hmm. I could stand behind that one.
You just have to be careful how much pizza you eat.
Yeah. Alright. Next up in some happy news, there's a new beetle species that was discovered, and the researchers have decided to name it after Greta Thunberg.
Yep. Let's see. It's newly described Neleptotis gretae. Belongs to a group of some of the smallest known free-living animals. And I believe they said, the family that I work on are some of the smallest known free-living creatures. They're not parasitic and are not living inside other creatures. Few of them measure more than a millimeter long. I expect this very well with the first time a species has been named after Greta. I don't have any other beetle named after her, that's for sure. Yeah. But yeah, it's... the beetles are usually found in the leaf litter in soil, feeding on fungal hyphae and spores. While there are a few dozen species known from the UK alone, in the tropics, their diversity is poorly understood. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're so small that they are even dwarfed by some unicellular organisms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Microscopes.
All right. Wow.
Mm-hmm. All right. And next, we got some tech news. Apple's very first iPhone XRs. Made within India, are showing up now on shelves.
How are they? Do we know how they're performing yet?
It's the same phones. They're just
same materials and
all that.
Yeah, but is the build quality going to be the same?
A Foxconn plant. Yeah.
Oh, is it Foxconn? Okay, so they already know what they're doing then.
Yeah. It's just that if Apple wants to sell in India, they have to make them.
Is that why Samsung has some that are made in Korea and some that are made in China?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah, it's sort of an alternate way to get out of China if they want to.
Yep.
Yeah.
India is also huge and has a shit ton of people there that need work.
Yeah. It's actually the second most populous country on the planet.
Oh, yeah, and they need phones, too. I mean, Jesus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so, all right, and last two stories, we got some trailers. First, we got the final trailer for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker.
I ain't watching it.
Yep, it's Star Wars as fuck.
Yep.
I'm not watching the trailer.
Don't bother.
There's a lot of sad stuff in the trailer.
Yeah.
It seems like it's going to be an interesting movie to watch.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is the last of the trilogies, so, you know.
Yeah.
The last of the Skywalker stuff.
Yeah.
Outside of any, like, show stuff they might do. Yeah. But, yeah, that's out on December 20th.
Yep.
So, still got... Kind of weird that they put out the last trailer about 2 months before that. But you'll see this probably at the head of a lot of movies in the theaters.
Mm-hmm. All right. But, yeah. And then finally, we got a trailer for the Bloodshot movie starring Vin Diesel. Do you guys know who Bloodshot is?
I do not.
Okay, if you were a comics person in the 90s, you know who Bloodshot was. He was a character who was originally showed up on Valiant Comics, which was the company that Jim Shooter started after he left Marvel. And for a while, Bloodshot number one was one of the most sought after and expensive comic books you could get a hold of. It also helped that the actual comic was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Yeah, so Vin Diesel's going to be starring in it, so you know what you're going to expect.
Yeah, a lot of monotone and
a lot of explosions. Monotone, explosions, and shit like that.
Yeah. And I'm totally okay with it. It actually looks like a movie I would probably enjoy.
Yeah.
And it basically seems like they spoiled the entire plot in this whole trailer.
This trailer is way too long.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, guess what? Here's a guy coming back to life. He remembers some things. He wants to finish his business.
Yep.
Then he wakes up again with a new memory. And then wants to finish his business.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess he's going to figure out that he's being used. And then finishes that business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the end.
All right. And, yeah, so I think we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
Yep.
All right, so I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, or just something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can possibly think of. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Sologi, good night, sleep tight, I'm going back to Cold Steel 3.